Good evening.
Good evening.
Nico, you ran away from Sashim.
I spoke with Marie on Monday. Before I took my leave, I had some personal business to take care of down the hill, so I left it shortly after breakfast, and I'll be back possibly before breakfast tomorrow.
Very good. Very good.
And I bring glad tidings, is that appropriate?
Yes.
To all from everybody up there. Sashim is going beautifully. Chris was there, and John was there, and Walter is there, of course. And everything's going just great.
Good. I can feel it. I can feel it all the way down in San Jose. It's just humming like a little engine.
We have 27 people.
Oh, Nico.
Or maybe 26.
Yes, that's wonderful.
I counted myself, or I counted Samia and Chris. Uh-huh. It's just beautiful.
Excellent. Excellent. Ah, I knew it. I knew it. Let's do introductions for him.
Yeah.
John, Chris,
Nico,
Shukra,
Jeffrey,
Chris,
Arsalan.
Okay. That's your real name.
Yeah.
Okay. My real name is Annabelle. Share with you what they're studying up at the Sashim. This is one of my favorite chapters of Shobo Genzo, one of Dogen's most beautiful writings. He wrote it early on in his life while he was still in Kyoto, and it's called the Mountains and Water Sutras, or sometimes the Mountain and River Sutras. It sounds like a nature poem, and in a sense it is a nature poem, but it's not exactly the way it appears. I think I'll read the first parts of it just because it's so interesting. And the first paragraph really says the whole thing in a way that I think anyone who has spent any time in the actual mountains or in the forest or on the sea knows. He says, these mountains and waters of the present are the expression of the old Buddhas. Each abiding in its own Dharma state fulfills exhaustive virtues. Because they are the circumstances prior to the kalpa of emptiness, they're just so old, they're beyond belief. They are this life of the present. Because they are the self before the germination of any subtle sign, way before belief, they are liberated in their actual occurrence. Since the virtues of the mountain are high and broad, the spiritual power to ride the clouds is always mastered from the mountains, and the marvelous ability to follow the wind is inevitably liberated from the mountains. We have what we call mountains here, but actually Dogen wasn't exactly talking about any particular mountains. He was talking more about the body of the earth, or rather the body of the universe. The actuality of the life and breath of every single thing. It's based on a poem that came before Dogen, a wonderful poem. He gives 5 translations. The sounds of the valley streams are his long, broad tongue. The forms of the mountains are his pure body. At night I heard the myriad sutra verses uttered. How can I relate to others what they say? Sometimes it goes 84,000 verses are heard throughout the night. How can I tell them to others? So this was a monk who was sleeping beside a little stream. And he heard it for what it was. It was a powerful experience of feeling the truth and the essence of what this chanting of sutras was as the little stream was burbling down the hill. Much of our practice is about listening, and much of our experience in Zazen and in Zen practice is about what we hear. We depend on our eyes so much that we sometimes overlook our or ignore our ability to tune, be in tune, to tune to the sutra that's going on all the time. You don't have to sleep beside a little brook in order to hear it. It's in the traffic. It's in the wind. It's and fills our ears all the time. But of course, it takes the ability to stop and listen and pay attention. Shogaku talks about his life as a monk. He tells his story, as he did in the Genjo book, as he goes through here. And he tells how the life of a monk is just sitting. And of course, he trained at Antaiji, where there was only sitting, nothing else. They didn't do Orioki. They didn't do any chanting or service. Nothing. They sat for 14 hours a day, 50 minutes at a time, and then 10 minutes of walking. He's still doing that in Bloomington, Indiana. You can go there and do it still today. The only one I know who did it was Peter Sislowski. And he hung in there. He did it. It was quite amazing. But he said he wouldn't do it again. So it was really, really hard. They got up at 3. And it's very intense. But Shogaku doesn't do it. He does half and half. He does 3 sesshins like that a year. And then 3 sesshins that he learned in Minnesota from Katagiri Roshi. Who taught him how to do the bells and all the bowing and all the things that we take for granted. Shogaku's teacher was a rebel and just eliminated all that stuff. He said he was so shy at the altar he couldn't do it. He just got shaky and he couldn't put the incense in, so he said he just wouldn't do it. Very simple. So he devotes the whole time to this beautiful image of the mountains and the waters. He says the mountains and waters are dwelling places for sages. Water is neither strong nor wet nor weak, neither wet nor dry, neither moving nor still. Frozen, it is harder than diamond. Who could break it? Melted, it's softer than milk. Who could break it? Water practices and verifies water. Since ancient times, wise men and sages have lived by the water. When they lived by the water, they hooked fish, or they hooked people, or they hooked the way. These are all water styles of old. And going further, there must be hooking the self, hooking the hook, being hooked by the hook, and being hooked by the way. Do you feel that sometimes, being hooked by the way? I do. Who knows how that happens? There is a mountain walk and a mountain flow. There is a time when the mountains give birth to a mountain child. The mountains become the Buddhas and ancestors, and it is for this reason that the Buddhas and ancestors have thus appeared. Even when we have the eyes to see the mountains as the appearance of grass and trees, earth and stone, fences and walls, this is nothing to doubt, nothing to be moved by. It is not the complete appearance of the mountains. Even when there appears an occasion in which the mountains are seen as the splendor of the seven treasures, this is still not the real refuge. Even when they appear to us as the realm of the practice of the way of the Buddhas, this is not necessarily something to be desired. Even when we attain the crowning appearance of the vision of the mountains as inconceivable virtues of the Buddhas, their reality is more than this. Each of these appearances is the particular objective and subjective result of past karma. They are not the karma of the way of the Buddhas and ancestors, but narrow, one-sided views. Seeing the mind and seeing the nature is the business of non-Buddhas. But there are words that are free from such realms. They are the blue mountains constantly walking, and the east mountain moving over the water. We should give them detailed investigation. When I first read this, I could see the mountains walking like a cartoon. It's really beautiful. And then I tried to figure out what he really meant. And I thought, well, mountains do walk. If you study geology at all, they're always moving, constantly moving, and sometimes in a very scary way. When I went to the mountains a month ago with Trout, Trout's the one who years ago was hit by a huge boulder as it just fell right off of a cliff as he was walking up a trail. And his pelvis was badly broken. He was a mess. And I've always thought, yes, mountains do walk. They walk. And when we drove in the mountains up to Tuolumne Meadows from the east side of Yosemite, there's a place where it says danger, and you can see just it's just crumbled rocks, and they're all falling down all the time. And you just have to be really, really careful. And he said he's never gotten over his accident. He always is terrified until he gets past that place. So in that sense, of course, mountains do walk. But this is more about how everything is moving, including we are moving and changing all the time. And that we ourselves are bigger than we think of ourselves. That our life itself is huge. And that our sort of picayune idea about ourself as this little story that we're carrying around is just one little aspect of this huge life that's living us and that we're living as we pass through just the Alameda and all the saints' names on the streets in San Jose, up and down the world that we live. We too are a world, you could, in a way. And to be aware as we go, is wonderful. It's truly wonderful. I've just been reading a lot of poems online. I'm connected with several people who put up a poem every single day. And they're so dark now. They're so dark. Everything is kind of icky. And I think, oh, that's not, in spite of, it's just that we think, and we're caught by our thinking. And every thought is a narrow, very narrow little slot of this huge, huge, huge life that we are. And we are acculturated by our culture, so they can prove now that even though we think we're very liberated and very free of bad thoughts about anybody, it can be proved that we have secret bad thoughts about a lot of people and a lot of things. It's what we discover when we sit also. When we sit, we have to see that it's not all a pretty picture. But to be aware of the bigness and include it all gives us joy. Into a thing about the bad people, the people who don't get it. And he calls them worthless little fools, shave tapes. People who don't understand. We we should realize that this teaching of the East Mountain moving over the water is the very bones and marrow of the Buddhas and ancestors. All the waters are appearing at the foot of the East Mountain, and therefore the mountains mount the clouds and stride through the heavens. The mountains are the peaks of the waters, and in both ascending and descending, their walk is over the water. The tips of the mountain's feet walk across the waters, setting them dancing. Therefore, their walking is 7 high and 8 across, and their practice and verification are not non-existent. So there's a long commentary on every, as you can see, it's a big book. But being Shogaku, he is extremely thorough about the meaning of just about every single word in medieval Japanese, and how Carl Bielefeld has translated it, and what it's based on as far as the rest of Buddhism from Buddha's time is concerned. He does a lot of quotations that are things that I've never seen before. So I recommend it. Though we are not going to be studying this, but we'll be studying the Heart Sutra starting next week. Are there questions? Comments? Clear as a bell.
Can you read the first part of the beginning?
The first paragraph?
I think so, yeah.
These mountains and waters of the present are the expression of the old Buddhas. Each abiding in its own Dharma state fulfills exhaustive virtues. Because they are the circumstances prior to the kalpa of emptiness, they are this life of the present. Because they are the self before the germination of any subtle sign, they are liberated in their actual occurrence. Since the virtues of the mountain are high and broad, the spiritual power to ride the clouds is always mastered from the mountains, and the marvelous ability to follow the wind is inevitably liberated from the mountains. He's talking about the present, and he's talking about the past, and that the past is the present. And actually the future is the present also, that each moment is included with all moments. We're not actually just marching from one point to the next. We're just living this moment as it unfolds itself. Like a tulip. It just starts out tight and then it just keeps opening up and opening up. Actually,
it seems like the way I put it. In one of the Rumi's poems, he chose instead of hook and hooked and the way, he chose love, lover and beloved. But love, beloved and love are melted in
same
one.
Thing. Yes.
So maybe you can say hook, hook and the way, beloved. They chose the way to
it comes together. Yes, beautiful. You're the Rumi expert. You can help us with that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. Your beloved. Yep.
Yeah. Actually, on that note, when you were talking about sometimes you feel like you're hooked by the way, can you relate to this experience of that feeling kind of annoying?
Not exactly annoying, but kind of gets in the way sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's out having fun, and I'm going up to Sashin for the fifth time in the year. I think, oh, really? So I gave up a lot for 40 years. I did not do a lot of things that would have been very fun to do in order to practice. And yet, I had no choice. I love the Dharma, and I cherished every opportunity to sit. So it was not a burden at all, but it was kind of a hook. You know? And I remember when I got hooked, it wasn't at Tassajara, though I realized that Zen was the message. Because I heard Suzuki Roshi speak a couple of times at Tassajara when I was a guest, and a by the way kind of guest. And then they sent me to Haiku Zendo, where Koban was, and I sat across from Koban just like Nico is sitting now. And I looked at him, and he looked at me, and bam, that was it. So he was a good fisherman. He was sitting by the water, and I just came right up out of it like a fish. Yeah, exactly. Yes. And I always feel sorry for people who ordain in a way, because it's the same kind of commitment, lifetime, many lifetime commitments, and it's so fine, it's such a wonderful thing to do, and yet, oh, you know, you're turning your face away from much, much that every culture enjoys, for the sake of others rather than oneself, and that's the difference. Really the only difference.
Oh, thank you. I have another question actually. So you were speaking like many times before that in Japan they look at Zazen as something that only monks do.
Pretty much.
Yeah, and so do you think integrating that with like a regular life, the way people here in our culture now sort of sit in the morning sometimes, do you think that's kind of new and something we're trying to invent?
Well, not exactly. What they're doing now in modern day Japan is sending businessmen from one big company to Eheiji to practice for a week. Or they send school teachers in the summer and they all get together and they practice for a week. And the practice is just a heiji style. You don't have a zabuton to sit on, you just sit on a mat, no mat. So it's not hard, it's not terribly hard, it's no harder than what we do. But it's considered to be healthy for people to give them a little break. But that's different from what we're doing. That's very different. And usually people train in order to take over a temple. And if you don't have a son, you adopt one. I know several adoptions, including Coben's. Coben was adopted by his master in order to teach, take over the temple and do everything. And he was a very naughty boy and he went to America instead. But he felt that in Japan things were taken for granted and people weren't really understanding the Dharma anymore. And so he wanted to bring it to America and see what he could do. He did two things. He gave a lot of detailed instruction to San Francisco Zen Center on exactly how to do everything. All the services, all the ceremonies, everything. And he came to Jikoji and he said, it's up to you. And he told me about things to do, make it up. So he left us really at sea. It was hard, actually. It was very hard because we learned so little from him, except when he would sit down and speak. And then his speaking was to open up the Dharma to us. But none of the, because he trained also at Anpaiji, he didn't bring in any of the falderal that we do, like the bowing and the drum and the bells. So we had to learn it ourselves. It's a choice.
But do you think there's a reason why people in Japan don't see it as something that you just, that any other person would do?
It's just a different realm. They use Zen for funerals. And it's not as extreme as that. There are choruses. They get together once a week and practice. There are wonderful village dances and festivals and things that are all around the temple. The temples that have been there for 500 years themselves. And so they're very ancient, those festivals. And everybody in the town participates in them, so it's a part of the village as well. But the village doesn't sit; they do other things. They run a nursery school. They do all kinds of good works for each other. But it's only the brown robes who do the stuff. Only they are empowered to do it. So we have a different understanding of that. Yeah. What's 8? Do we have to stop? So if anything's happening, I don't think any of us knows. They'll all be back next week. so.
Got the Jakai on Friday.
Oh, yes, thank you. Thank you. Yes, please come on Friday at 2 o'clock for Judy. It's a very, very beautiful thing. All her family is going to come. Yeah. So please be there. 1 minute, sit.